Podcast brought to you by Full Press Coverage. I'm joined here today with Mark Bullock, formerly of the Washington Post and The Athletic. He's an NFL film analyst. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing very good, man. It's Happy Tuesday. I'm trying to get through the weekend nowadays with work and trying to make through it. I'm also here with my co-host, Big Doug McCray. How are you doing, Doug?
I'm doing well. Thank you, George.
All right, good. It's good to see you guys. So, it's funny. We're talking, pre-show before I started talking to Mark, and we talked about how, like, I haven't talked to him in a long time. Mark, I'm just kind of curious, right? A lot has changed in Commander Land over the past couple months, and now we are potentially going to get a new owner. I'm kind of curious about that. How do you kind of oversee the whole transition change? Are you happy with Harris as a new owner? Kind of describe your Dan Snyder experience, especially coming from the UK.
Yeah, well, my Dan Snyder experience is obviously not as severe as what you guys have had to endure out there. I've only had to endure it from afar, and not for as long as most fans that would have been brought up and lived through it more extremely than I did. But, you know, the last decade or so that I've been really, I guess, covering the team or writing about the team, and you kind of, the more you dig into the team, you see the impact that the owner has, and just how bad Snyder is, and so it did get to a point for the last few years where it's like, yeah, they made a good move, but Snyder's still the owner, so nothing's ever going to really work. And it's like, oh, maybe they got a decent quarterback, but Snyder's still the owner. Maybe they got a decent head coach, Snyder's still the owner. So it kept coming back to that, and it just felt like, I think the analogy people have used is, it felt like there's this cloud that's been over the team for decades now, and it feels like that's finally being lifted. So for me, I've always been more of a focus on the X's and O's and what's happening on the field kind of thing. But you know, the culture of the team and their ability to win games is directly impacted by what the owner does. So it's a lot more fun from, I guess, I struggle to call myself media because I'm not covering the team like a beat reporter, but it's a lot more fun to cover a team that is successful on the field, even though we quite often get criticized by fans saying, like, we prefer it when when Snyder and there's all these allegations and stuff, it's more for us to write about. It's like, well, I'd much rather be writing about a fun, successful team playing the Super Bowl. That's a lot more fun for me to write about. So hopefully we can get through this quickly and start focusing on just the football stuff.
Well, he's moved to England, so he's your problem now.
Exactly right. And that's actually a great follow-up question. So, Mark, how's that perceived? I'm sure you have, like, you know, coffee talk shop or tea talk shop or whatever. You guys are just having lunch with somebody. And you're like, you know, one of my favorite interests is the Commanders football team. How's that perceived over in, like, you know, the UK and over in Sweden now? Like, are, like, people even know what you're talking about? Are they, like, disgusted with your choice? Or what's the thought behind all that?
Snyder and the NFL will be a topic, and it's growing it into a bigger topic, and general sports, sports have become so global now that there are fans all around the world, and like, you see these sports like the NFL, you see F1 taking off around the world, the Premier League in England is obviously global and stuff, so the sports are becoming bigger and bigger, but so people are talking about them. But things like the Commanders and like Dan Snyder, that unless you're into the NFL, you don't really, that doesn't scratch the surface over here. So it's not a huge talking point. But amongst those, my friends that are into the NFL, everyone's happy for me, at least, that the Commanders are finally being sold.
George, for perspective, do you know who the number one cricket player is in the world and how many Instagram followers he has?
Doug, I have no idea. Do you?
I do. His name is Cooley, I believe.
And it's Virat Kohli.
Kohli. And it's like 256 million.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It dwarfs LeBron James's numbers. It's incredible.
That is incredible. That's actually very interesting. Okay, very interesting. I guess last question before we move on, Mark. So me and Doug were talking on his podcast the other day. How did you feel when you heard that when Dan Snyder was selling the team? Like, I don't want to, like, me and Doug kind of felt like it's kind of been anticlimactic because it's kind of taken a long time to kind of unfold. Like, are you relieved? Are you still kind of, you know, frustrated at this point? Or what's your belief system about Dan Snyder transitioning right now?
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. These kind of things always take a while, and kind of on a similar topic, like I'm a Man United fan, and Man United are currently in the middle of a sale from the Glazers with, you know, the Bucks owners, and that is kind of a long protracted sale, and it kind of they roughly both teams kind of roughly started looking into sale possibilities around about the same time, and both teams initially were like, well, we're gonna have the sale done by Q1 2023, and obviously now we're into May and neither team has been sold yet. So I kind of understand that this is kind of just the process, and you know, it's gonna get done. And even as late as today, like Roger Goodell and all the guys at the owners meetings are pretty confident that this is going to get done. So I'm not too worried about it. At this point, it's pretty clear that Snyder is not really involved anymore. He's not even at the owners' meetings. So, you'd like to get Harris in there as soon as possible, and so that he could, you know, invest in the practice facilities and that kind of thing to get all of that up to standard. But that's not going to be a thing that happens overnight. It's not like he takes over tomorrow and by next Wednesday, it's, you know, they've got this huge, amazing new facility to practice in. That's going to be down the road. So, if the sale happens tomorrow, or if it happens, you know, in 2 or 3 months' time before the season, that doesn't really matter to me.
Gotcha. So let's pivot a little bit. So we talked about all this off the field stuff for months and months now. It's kind of dragging on, but now we actually finally got football around the corner and we're starting to see OTAs this week and OTAs next week. Mark, I'm kind of curious, like, how do you view OTAs and what's like your, like, what do you want to see or want to hear about over the next 2 weeks? What would be a successful, you know, transition for the team right now?
Yeah, it's OTAs are obviously an important part of the off-season schedule, and they're more important for teams that are installing a new system. So, like on offense, it's very important for those guys to be in there. It's a great opportunity for the coaches and the players to get one-on-one time, and especially for like young guys like Sam Howell trying to learn Eric Bieniemy's system and get caught up with that. So it's a big important part of the off season for them. For the defensive guys, you know, they've been in the system now for a few years, so for me that it's not as big a deal if certain guys don't show up. I'm sure that's a talking point that's happening right now, but
Yes, sir. I was going to ask you in a moment.
so when you know the system, it's not as big a deal, and then it's just a case of, you know, working out and staying on top of things. So, and you know, these guys are professionals that I'm sure they will be working out and being healthy and staying on top of things, and they'll be doing their own training stuff on technique or whatever, away from the facility if they're not there. I think for me, for over the last few years, I've kind of come to, yeah, obviously, in an ideal situation, you want everyone there showing up and taking part, but it's more important if you have a new coaching staff that, you know, they're installing a new system, then you really want everyone there, because if they're not there, they're missing out on valuable time that they could be learning the new system. But if you're a year or two into a system, to me, it's not a big deal.
Gotcha. And then Doug, I'm actually going to ask you a question before you ask Mark one. So I haven't talked to you yet. We always talk offline and stuff, but what are your thoughts? So obviously Chase Young, Montez Sweat, and Charles Leno's are not did not show up today in practice. Is that an irritation for you? Are you upset with that? How do you feel?
Well, let's take each one of them. Let's start with Chase Young because that's the big one, and everybody is. This is funny. We live in a very polarized world right now, right? You're either on one side or the other of almost everything. There's very
True.
little middle ground. Here's what I'll say about Chase Young. Chase Young knew, had to know that Ron wanted him there Ron wanted him there last year. A good portion of the reason that he didn't get the fifth-year option was because Ron was upset that he didn't buy in and didn't come last year when they basically, to my understanding, begged him to come. And he didn't do it again this year. And all the while knowing that his boss wanted him there. So to me, at some point, it's you're doing it for a reason. I'm not sure what that reason is. I'm not sure the point that's trying to be made is. I think we'll find out that Leno probably had something that was excused. Maybe Chase Young did too. You know, I mean, I don't want to trash him for no reason.
I agree.
It just feels like this is repetitive in nature, and it feels odd to me. It feels like it would be a lot easier for Chase Young to just show up for a couple of days, even if he didn't want to participate for whatever reason. To me, just being there and being around your teammates is worth going. So I'm not sure why, you know, you never get him to tell you, but I'd love to know what his thought process is on what the benefit is of doing this again, because I don't understand it. And Montez usually is there, so I'll be curious. Yeah. I think Ron's going to talk tomorrow about what's going on there and guys, but frankly, three big names, but only three out of the whole group didn't make it. So, I mean, actually a really good turnout.
That's a very good turnout. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head too. I kind of agree with you as well. I think the Charles Leno absence is kind of abnormal. Like, he's one that's typically there and kind of shows his face every single time. Montez Sweat's typically there. He might miss like one or two here or there, but it's usually like there's a reasonable excuse for that as well. I don't want to jump on Chase Young yet. I want to see what's going on. There might be potentially something, you know, he might have a family issue going on for all we know, right? But if there isn't, I would want him there, right? Just for to show faces, show cultures, to show unity with the team. The one thing I do, the kind of like I've kind of noticed as well, is mandatory camp is June 6th to June 8th. So in like about 2 weeks, there he has to be at camp. So maybe he's kind of biding his time, and you know, this is his vacation before he starts ramping it up. So we'll see how that goes. But I do agree. I think Ron Rivera was explicit. He wants him there, and we haven't seen anything. You know, we haven't seen a good show of faith on from Young's end, which is concerning because he wanted to be a leader. So we see
and
that.
George, just real quick, people brought up Terry today. I saw about him not going last year. Big difference. Terry was trying to get a contract, knew he was going to get a contract. This situation to me is like the antithesis of that, right? Like, there is no contract coming for Chase Young. In fact, he should be there proving to me, not to me, but to Ron, that he wants a new contract and he's there and he's all bought in. So to me, for those that bring up Terry from last year, totally different scenario.
And then Terry was there, to be honest with you. Terry was at practice consistently during classwork, but he wasn't actually taken on the field to prevent injury. So I agree with you there. Mark, you want to touch on that at all, or did you kind of share already what you wanted to say?
Yeah, no, I think you guys are right. Like, Terry was a completely different situation. And I think, as I kind of mentioned with Chase Young, like, it depends on the reason he's not there. And like, from my perspective, if he's like at, say, the Von Miller pass rushing camp thing that they do every year, and I don't know what time that every year that is, so that might not be what he's at. But if he's, for example, there, like, for me, that being with a big group of really good pass rushers for a weekend is going to be more beneficial to Chase Young's technique and overall play in the season than him working out at the facility and getting the same coaching he's had for the last few years, you know, and installing the system that he already knows what the system is like that. So for me, that would indicate something that'd be more beneficial to him, but who knows if that's actually what he's doing. I think it's just a case of wait and see. And it could be a case of like, he shows up tomorrow and it was just today he couldn't get a flight in or something like that, you know, who knows? So, we'll see.
Yep.
Let's go ahead. I was just saying, let's hope that's what it is and be optimistic that it's not, you know, him shooting a pizza commercial for Paisanos or something like that.
Eastern Motors, exactly.
Yeah. If you hear the Eastern Motors jingle, bad news for sure. Mark, let's get onto the offensive side a little bit. I mean, it feels like, I'm sure you've watched a bunch of EB and what they did with the Chiefs. I know that we were hoping to get a lot more 12 personnel last year. It still feels like we have the right grouping to be able to run some of that? Do you think we'll see more of that? They said in camp so far that they put an emphasis on getting to the line, out of the huddle and into the line quickly. I hope that we move with greater tempo and pace than we did last year. Are these things that we should be expecting from an EB offense? And how much do you think it will mimic that Chiefs offense?
Yeah, I think to a degree it will mimic. I think that Chiefs offense kind of evolved over the last few years, and somewhat out of necessity, and somewhat out of just, you know, how players mature and stuff. The offense from 2021 was quite different from the offense that they had last year, because in 2021 they had Tyreek Hill, and that obviously brings a very explosive element, whereas last year they didn't have him, and it was a much more conservative West Coast offense style system, but they schemed things up and they prepared so well to know the tendencies of the opposing defense that even if they call just basic West Coast offense stuff, they're calling it at the right time so that they know that their first or second read is usually getting open and it's usually getting the ball out pretty quick. And like, as much as there were the magic Mahomes plays where he'd scramble around and find Travis Kelce with some ridiculous throw 40 yards down the field, there was like good periods of games where it was Mahomes getting a free 5 yard slant, or you know, he'd drop back and get the ball out on his third step and find a receiver wide open across the middle. And that was down to not just well-designed plays, but knowing the tendencies of the defense, understanding that in second and eight, they're going to play this coverage, and we know that we're going to get this matchup, and that's going to be this is where you need to go with the ball. And Mahomes could basically work one to two reads and get the ball out real quick. And I think that is what the enemy will be looking to replicate in Washington, because that would allow them to lean on what Sam Howell does well, which is get the ball out quickly, and get the ball into the playmakers' hands. And obviously they've got a lot of playmakers here in Washington. So guys like McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Don Dotson, they're all going to be really good with the ball in the hands after the catch. So that's the kind of offense that I'm expecting them to replicate. It is quite similar to what the Chiefs did last year, minus the kind of Mahomes, Kelce stuff that nobody can replicate. But the kind of scripts that they draw up, I think that's what I'd be looking to replicate. And the stuff that you touched on there, like, yeah, you want to be more urgent getting to the line. You want to be able to see with a clear head that, okay, I'm at the line of scrimmage. I know what the defense is doing. They're not looking too confusing, or I've got time to process. Okay, maybe that does look like a blitz coming off the right side, or, you know, that is a kind of a split safety look, but there might be disguising something, so I can check this guy post snap and I know where I need to go with the ball. And the quicker you're out of the huddle and up to the line of scrimmage, the longer you have to kind of read the defense and understand the keys that you need to know where to go with the ball and get the ball out quickly. So it makes total sense to be having that sense of urgency to get up and lined up quickly to read the defense and give yourself as much time as possible to know where you're going with the ball.
And to follow up with that, so Sam Howell, you know, across all the national media, there's pressure, but criticism almost about how Washington wasn't aggressive enough with the quarterback position. Do you think Sam Howell is a good fit for what Washington wants to do this year with the EB? And do you think they should have been more aggressive, or are you confident in Howell and his scheme fit? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I from a franchise standpoint, I felt like it was the right move to give Howell a go. And you know, with the ownership situation and this probably being a one and done situation for Ron Rivera, you don't necessarily want him having a huge say in what the next quarterback decision was going to be. You didn't want him going trading three first round picks to go up to second overall and drafting whoever. You know, you wanted that future flexibility. I would imagine any new owner coming in would want that. So from that perspective, the decision to go to just for a cheaper quarterback option made plenty of sense. And you have a guy in Sam Howell that does have a lot of talent. And yes, he was a fifth round pick and there were reasons he fell. Yes, he's only played one game. It was a promising game against Dallas. There were some issues, but some good signs of development too. So I didn't disagree with the decision to go with Howell at all. I think it was the best one for the long-term future of the franchise, which isn't necessarily the best decision for Ron Rivera. Like, if Rivera is wanting to keep his job, he probably should be going all in on finding the best guy and giving himself the best chance to win a Super Bowl this year. But for the future of the franchise, I think that was the right thing.
Go ahead, Doug.
We've talked about this a little bit before, Mark, and I thought it was apropos to bring it up again now, simply because you had mentioned Ron and the possibility of this being a one and done. It's come up also in the media recently about the idea of having a defensive minded head coach. I think it was Alex Smith that kind of said, you know, that the nature of defensive minded head coaches kind of stump the growth of a quarterback because they're willing to just pound the rock and play really good defense. But also with that, and this is what you and I talked about maybe a year ago, and I thought was really great and fits here, is this idea that if you are or hire a defensive-minded head coach and the team is good and you score a lot of points, you'll be replacing the offensive coordinator all the time. And in a league where we're built on offense, much rather be replacing defensive coordinators every couple of years than offensive coordinators. Do you still feel that way as far as who you like as being the head man?
Yeah, I think the ideal template is you have your offensive-minded head coach that installs his system and you find a young quarterback that grows with that head coach and then they are entrenched in that system for a number of years. And the longer you're in a system, the better you get at it. And that is just the ideal situation. And if you have a defensive-minded head coach, as you say, you will have a situation where you do have to cycle through offensive coordinators because if you're good, your offensive coordinator is going to get hired by someone. Yeah. So that's not to say you can't be successful with a defensive-minded head coach. And I get what Alex Smith was pointing at with certain defensive head coaches do play that more kind of conservative style. But there are plenty of offensive head coaches that play that more conservative style too. I think Mike McCarthy with the Cowboys, when he was talking about how Kellen Moore was moved on to the Chargers this offseason, and he talked about how Kellen Moore just wanted to focus on scoring as many points as possible and didn't think about, you know, trying to run the ball and maintain the clock and give his defense a break. And Mike McCarthy said, when you become a head coach, you learn that the defense is an important part too, and they need their time too. So there is some merit to that, but there's also, you know, there are conservative offensive coaches and there are aggressive defensive coaches. So it's not necessarily just a offensive defensive thing. I think it's more an aggressive mentality thing, but certainly from a perspective of your ideal situation, you would want a Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay offensive mind that is going to have, even if they get their guys hired from them, like we've seen everyone's been hiring Kyle Shanahan staff or Sean McVay staff for the last few years, they still will be able to keep their system in place and allow their quarterbacks to grow within that system.
So speaking of defense, Washington has invested a lot in their defense over the past couple of years, especially with early draft picks. This year we picked Emmanuel Forbes in the first round and Quan Martin in the second round. So that's a pretty heavy investment in the secondary. We were talking offline through, you know, our group chats, also in Doug's podcast as well. How do you think it's all going to shake down in regard to who's going to play where? Like, is Emmanuel Forbes, you'd assume he'd be a boundary corner, and where does Kendall Fuller fit and where does Quan Martin fit in your opinion?
Yeah. So you would assume that Forbes is going to be – Forbes, to me, is an outside corner. I think he probably has the ability to play coverage from the slot. I think The issue for me with him being in the slot, obviously that frame that's been talked about, the 166-pound measurement at the combine, which they're now saying he's like 176 or whatever, but it's that his frame is small, and when you play in the slot, you have to be part of run fits. And so that would be something that I'd be wary of. And I think in profiles I've done of him, he definitely is a willing and able tackler and happy to come up and play the run. But you don't necessarily want to put him in a position where he needs to be involved in the run quite so often. So I think for me, he's an outside corner, and I'm sure Ron Rivera and the coaching staff will say, you know, he has to earn it. Nothing's going to be given to him, but I suspect by the end of training camp, he's going to be the starting corner, and then it's going to be Fuller and St. Juice to kind of battle it out, you know, opposite him. And for me, I wrote a piece about this the other week, whether you go with St. Juice or Fuller. And for me, the stronger argument is to go for Kendall Fuller. Fuller is a more reliable corner. He fits the system a lot better. And he kind of gives you Forbes is a very similar style of player to Fuller, in that they both are very good playing off with vision. And that allows you to play the kind of quarters or the match coverages, the zone match coverages that they like to run. St. Juiced can do that stuff, but he's very inconsistent with it. And he's much more at home when he's up on the line pressing players and playing pure man coverage. And as I wrote in last week, there are situations where certain quarters coverages, when teams go to a 3-by-1 formation, the one receiver on the backside, as part of a different coverages, quite often that one receiver on the backside gets locked up in man-to-man coverage. And that would be a situation where maybe you do want a St. Juice instead of a Fuller. But if you're putting St. Juice on the field just for that, it'd be very easy for the offense to manipulate that and attack St. Juice they could just motion a receiver across there. It's a 2-by-2, and suddenly St. Juice is having to play off again and play that zone stuff that he's not quite as accomplished at. So for me, I would go with Fuller with hit opposite him. And then in the slot, I would go with Quan Martin. I think that's what they will do. And I think he gives them the flexibility to stay in that Buffalo nickel package that they like, with the three safety package. And he can be that third guy, but he could be basically a nickel corner. And then when the opposition has two tight ends on the field, you have two bigger bodies in Cam Curl and probably Derek Forrest that come down into the box, and Martin can just simply rotate back deep as the free safety. And then you get your two tight ends matched up with the two bigger bodies. So then you've got those guys that can defend the run, but also match up on the tight ends, and you've still got solidity back deep. And then if the offense decides to, you know, spread it out and they've got their tight end, or if they still have out a tight end for a receiver, Martin can quite easily rotate down and cover the slot, and Derek Forrest can go back. So the defensive personnel doesn't have to change, and they can match up a lot better regardless of the offense.
More like multiple on defense. Before I throw it over to Doug, for a quick snapshot, what was your overall takeaway of the draft class? Were you pretty happy with it? Were you disappointed with the strategy that Washington went with, or what was your thoughts? And as you reviewed some too.
Yeah, I like a lot of the players they took. Obviously, ideally, you would have liked to have landed an offensive lineman earlier than they did. You would have liked to have seen them get a guy that you know is going to be contributing to them. Obviously, that would be like a first or a second round pick in the offensive line. But if they didn't like the guys there, then you don't want to force that. I do like the two offensive linemen they drafted. I think certainly down the road, I think Stromberg could be pushing to start sooner rather than later. I think just because they have signed Gates, that to me suggests that he's going to be the guy at least going into the season. By the end of the year, I think Stromberg could take that. Certainly next year, Stromberg will be competing for that job. Daniels, I think, is someone that is a little bit more of a project. So I don't think he's necessarily ready to be a starting left tackle in the NFL right now. But he has incredible feet. He's a fantastic athlete. He's someone that needs to bulk up a little bit and work out some technical issues that he does have. And that includes with his feet. His footwork can get messed up, but he's got incredibly quick feet that allow him to recover from situations that not a lot of tackles can. So there is a very good tackle there. It just needs to be developed. And there's obviously no guarantee that it will be, but I think there is a lot of talent there. So I really like the talent that they picked. The top four guys that they got, I think are really talented. I just don't necessarily think they necessarily got the impact players that they needed in for this coaching staff in this year anyway.
I agree. I think that's a fair analysis. Go ahead, Doug. What do you got?
Well, I was just Adam Aniba yesterday said he thinks that Sadiq Charles ends up being the odd man out after we break this thing down to 53. If we assume that Gates starts at center, at least for game one, we'll see what happens after that. Who do you think ends up at the left guard spot? I mean, to me, that's the center and the left guard, in my mind, are the two biggest question marks, maybe on the entire roster, much less the offensive line, who we're asking to protect a second-year player with one game under his belt. I mean, are we looking at – if we're trying to get the best players, best five out there, is it Stromberg at center and Gates at left guard? Or do you think they'll start out with Gates at center – and like Chris Paul at left guard? Because I think we all can agree that Norwell is not long for the team, you know, with this June 1 cut out of the way.
Yeah, well, given that Rivera has constantly forgot about him whenever asked about the left guard spot, I think that is the writing on the wall for Norwell a little bit. But, you know, personally, I don't see Gates as a left guard. I know they brought him in as this, you know, they always like to hype up position flex, and he did play left guard. But when I watched him for the Giants, the first few games I watched him, he played left guard. And I was like, why are they signing this guy? He is not very good at left guard. And then he played center, and I was like, okay, I can actually see there's something about him at center that it's like, okay, he makes sense at center, and there's actual potential there. And so for me, I wouldn't want him at left guard at all, but maybe that is a route they go. I think they probably end up with him at center. And maybe Stromberg beats him out. I would think there's enough for Stromberg to be working on, where you can say that Gates justifiably is the starting center going into week one. And then I think it is kind of, I think Rivera's been pretty straight with it. I think it's a shootout between Chris Paul and Sadiq Charles for that left guard spot. Unless there is, you know, there's obviously going to be more rounds of cuts happening.
That's right.
There could be a Charles Leno situation where a tackle or a guard comes available. And I think the versatility of Andrew Wiley gives them the flexibility to say, okay, well, if a tackle becomes available, we can kick Wiley inside to guard. And then you've got Cosme and Wiley at guard, and you've got a new right tackle. Or, you know, if a left guard comes available, then great, you plug him in and you're happy about it. But I think as things stand, I think it's a battle between Sadiq Charles and Chris Paul. I think for me, I still like what Charles brings. And like, there are flashes of plays where it's like, okay, there's still some good talent here. And you can see why he was highly rated as a draft pick. But it's just the health. He's never been able to stay healthy, and as an offensive line, do you really want to go into a season where you're starting a guy at left guard that has hardly played a snap for you, or certainly hardly been able to finish a game for you? So for me, that would give the edge to Chris Paul, because, you know, he's been more available, and I think Paul's a little bit more athletic, and they've been pretty clear with the kind of guys that they targeted this offseason, that they've been looking at more athletic profiles, and Paul is certainly that. So for me, I would think the edge goes to Paul, but it sounds like from the OTAs and minicamps and stuff so far, Charles has been the guy that's been running with the ones. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how that plays out in camp.
Gotcha. I got one or two more, and Doug, you can jump in whenever you want to. So the reason why I wanted to have you on, Mark, is I was reading some of your Substacks, and Chris Rodriguez, I was really intrigued by him. I'm curious, how do you feel about him being drafted, and how do you think he'd fit with Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson? And do you think do you think that's going to change with EB kind of like unfolding, and maybe Antonio Gibson has a new role this year? What do you
think? Yeah, I think he's an interesting player. He definitely is quite similar in style to Brian Robinson. He's not as explosive as Brian Robinson, and we didn't quite yet see the explosiveness that Robinson has last year, obviously due to the, you know, the shooting and him working his way back from that. That's a tough thing to work your way back from. Yeah. So he didn't have in college, one of his best moves, Brian Robinson, was to be able to make this kind of explosive lateral jump cut, and he didn't necessarily have that to the level that he would have liked. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I think he will be the starting running back. Rodriguez is a lot more straight downhill. I think he'll be a really good zone runner. He can run gap scheme stuff. Like, they ran plenty of gap scheme in college with him. You'll hear coaches use the term no nonsense with certain running backs, and he's very much that. He's not going to be that Le'Veon Bell type where he's dancing around behind the line of scrimmage waiting for a hole to appear and then suddenly burst through it. He's not doing any of that. He is getting the ball. He's going one cut, and then he is getting up the field. And that is perfect for kind of a zone scheme. I'd imagine Kyle Shanahan's and the zone runners of the world would really like someone like Rodriguez. I think he becomes not necessarily the primary backup. I don't think he's going to take away like all of Gibson's carries. I think Robinson's going to take the bulk of the workload, and I think Gibson will get plenty because of the kind of RPOs and the passing game stuff that he's going to be involved in. I think Gibson will get plenty, but I think if you're trying to spell Robinson on certain plays, you might look to go more to Rodriguez than Gibson, because I think Gibson is going to be moved into that kind of third down back role that McKissick obviously has held for the last few years, and I think he can be more involved in the passing game, and I think there are that's not a position to be kind of undervalued in this offense. If you look last year, Jerick McKinnon with the Chiefs, he scored 9 touchdowns as a receiver from the running back spot. And that was second on the Chiefs team. So it's quite a weapon for them in the red zone. And Eric Bieniemy knows how to make use of the running back position. Obviously, the screen game is a part of that, and that goes back to what we were talking about with the profile of offensive linemen that they've been targeting with more athletic guys that are able to get out and block in space, should improve the screen game, and Antonio Gibson should be able to provide the explosiveness to go along with that. So I think that's where you'll see the value of Gibson is in the passing game, with the screen game, and in the red zone in particular. They find ways to move the running back around and get him the ball on shorter, not necessarily like long bombs down the field. It'll be short, quick game stuff, but it'll just be mismatches that the defense is so preoccupied by McLaurin and Dotson and Samuel and where is everyone lined up, and you just kind of forget, oh yeah, there's Gibson and he's got the ball and he's walking into the end zone. So that's kind of how I think it kind of plays out.
Yeah, I'll throw it over to Doug for the very last question. Just kind of touching on Rodriguez, maybe I'm underselling him, but I remember a couple of years ago, Washington was disappointed. They kind of played around with Peyton Barber, and they basically put him on the waiver wire, and he got plucked by the Raiders. I'm kind of curious if they kind of use Rodriguez as like a short yardage back and kind of use him as like that power back role that they kind of were missing over the past couple of years. Just my thoughts on that. Go ahead, Doug, sorry.
Well, I just, as far as Rodriguez goes, you know, I watched a ton of SEC football, and there were times when Kentucky didn't have anything going on, and he still couldn't stop Rodriguez. I mean, I think he's much better than he's probably getting credit for. I mean, I'm he's not LaDainian Tomlinson or anything, but I do think he's going to be a lot more productive than people think. The last one I have for Mark is we kind of started out the podcast with talking about defensive head coaches and their reluctance to be aggressive. If we believe Ron, and if we believe that Bieniemy kind of has the autonomy to do what he wants, you know, the team didn't score 20 points per game last year, right? So, I mean, it's still a young quarterback with a uncertain offensive line. How aggressive do you think they'll be this year on offense?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and it's a tough one to answer because you don't really know exactly how much Bieniemy was calling the plays and how much influence. Obviously, there was the Andy Reid stuff, and Andy Reid, like, Bieniemy was the one that was feeding the play into the quarterback's headset. So technically, he was calling the play, but the way it worked is more of it was a committee thing where Andy Reid and Bieniemy would, after every series, they'd go back and they'd talk through and they'd be like, okay, this was the coverage we were expecting. This is the coverage we got. This is the kind of look that we think we can exploit, and we can exploit it with this play. And then when it got into those situations, it was fairly obvious consensus that, like, okay, we've seen now that this is what they're running, and this is the kind of play that we think can beat that, and so we'll call that play in that time. So in the right moments, they will be aggressive. I think the offense is going to be more predicated around the kind of quick game passing, getting the ball out as quickly as possible, and getting out on time, and letting the kind of the playmakers make plays. And so it's not going to be, you know, they're not going to be running four verticals every play, throwing bombs down the field. It's going to be maybe a little bit more methodical, and hopefully you find, you know, McLaurin Blake breaks a 5-yard slant into a 25-yard catch and run and catch, you know, so, and that's your explosive play. And maybe you get the right look and you hit a deep shot every now and again, and then that's great. But if it's not, then you're still, you know, methodically working your way down the field and getting the ball out quickly and on time. And so it's tough to say exactly how aggressive he'll be because he's not done it on his own. I think he will be aggressive in the right spots, but he is also, you know, he is a running back. And so he will want to use the running game. And I think what we'll see is there'll be a lot of run plays and pass plays kind of mixed. Obviously the RPO game is a big thing in Kansas City, and I think it will be a big thing here for Bieniemy. And so there will be plays where, and there will be games where we're thinking, why didn't they pass the ball more? And it'll be a case of, well, there were 10 RPOs and the defense played them in such a way that they had to run the ball on 9 of those plays. And then there'll be another week where it'll be, well, we called 10 RPOs and the defense played in such a way where we had to pass it 10 times and they didn't run the ball enough. So it will be largely dependent on how the defense plays, because that is the thing that Bieniemy should be bringing to this team, is how they prepare and how they scout opponents and how the timing of, it's not so much the concepts. The concepts themselves can be quite basic. It's more the timing of, we know the defense is going to be in this look at this time, and they do, and in Kansas City they do that better than anyone else, and that's what you're hoping that Bieniemy is going to bring.
All right, Mark, we'll end on this one. It seems like you're thinking that Washington would be more of a run-first team, or that's kind of the impression that I'm catching from you. Maybe I'm speaking for you, but if you were to make a declaration now, I know it's May 23rd, who do you think is going to lead the team in touchdowns on offense?
In touchdowns, I would think...
We won't hold you to it. It's all good.
Yeah, no, I think it would probably be either Dotson or possibly Gibson on an outside chance of, you know, Gibson can obviously, as I talked about with McKinnon, he was their second leading touchdown scorer last year for the Chiefs, and they find ways to get the running back the ball in the red zone and let them score, and so Gibson could do that. But obviously if they're running RPOs and stuff, Gibson can take handoffs for runs as well and score that way. So I think Gibson would have a good chance. I think Jahan Dotson, we saw at the start of last year just how effective he is in the red zone, and he is so quick, and I think if you move him into the slot in certain situations, I think he's going to score. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's going to score a lot of touchdowns. So for me, it would be one of those two.
Right. That McKinnon stat is a good one. I didn't know that, and it makes me excited, right? You keep talking about, are we going to unleash Gibson? It makes me a little excited, I got to tell you.
I love it. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We definitely went over time. It's all for thank you for all that. Mark, real quickly, kind of plug where they can find you, your socials, and anything you're working on. And same thing with you, Doug.
So my Twitter handle is at MarkBullockNFL, and my Substack, where you can read all my breakdowns, is markbullock.substack.com.
All right, sounds good. Doug, what about you, bro?
Big Douglas Show is out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, usually around 4 o'clock by the time it all gets edited. You know how that goes. So, yeah, you can check it out there.
All right, guys, this is George Carney from Full Press Commanders, Command the Mic podcast. Take care. Have a good night. Peace.